is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
My colleague and friend Thaddeus McCutter, American Greatness, and we welcome Malcolm Hohnlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, the Middle East, and it begins with a tragedy. Thaddeus?
Malcolm, we're receiving reports that three Israeli soldiers were killed in an act of terrorism. What can you tell us about it?
Yes, it was indeed a tragedy that a pair of young soldiers, a male and female, who were in an outpost near the border with Egypt, were killed. And then subsequently, in a firefight where they were soldiers were tracking down the killer, an additional soldier was killed, as was the terrorist himself, who, it turns out, is an Egyptian policeman who was had a job of guarding the border. And the gunman walked 5 kilometers from his guard post inside Egypt. He climbed up a cliff to reach what is an emergency gate, which is used by the IDF. And those who have traveled in the south or along Israel's borders have seen them, where they can cross the border when necessary in cooperation with the Egyptian army. And he obviously knew the area well. He entered Israel, walked 150 meters to the guard post where he killed the two soldiers. After they were discovered dead, the IDF began to search for their perpetrator. An army drone identified the attacker hiding behind a rock about a kilometer and a half from the border. And a group of soldiers approached him. He opened fire from 200 meters and he killed the additional soldier, and another group of soldiers were there, killed him. They say the Egyptian army is fully cooperating with the investigation. There were a variety of initial reports that were not correct. They say he was chasing a group of drug smugglers. Now it appears that this was a pre-planned deadly attack. The Egyptian soldier was very frustrated with his assignment. I'm sure we will learn more about his connections to any kind of radical groups inside Egypt itself. But it's not going to lead to any kind of a deterioration in the relationships between Egypt and Israel. They're too important. And the fact that everybody's cooperating and trying to get to the bottom of it is a positive sign.
The General Assembly of the United Nations, always a challenge to interpret these events. Iran is now a vice president of the General Assembly. What does that mean, Malcolm?
Well, there are many vice chairmen of the General Assembly elected, but the fact that the Iran regime was appointed as one of the vice presidents for the session that begins next September, as you know, when they have the opening and the tie up New York traffic, he was also appointed to be the rapporteur, get this, of the Disarmament and Nonproliferation Committee, the worst proliferator. The U.S. mission to the U.N. expressed opposition to giving Iran these kind of leadership posts. They said they can't be an honest broker as a vice president of the General Assembly because they've shown over and over again their bias, their efforts to undermine global peace and security, the shameful acts that they're doing with Russia, supplying them Ukraine, and murdering their own citizens and innocents around the world through their support of terrorism. And yet they are being honored. This is the same country that calls for the destruction of another member state of the UN, obviously Israel, but also undermines the other regimes in the Gulf overall. So Iran's election, not only to this, but to the UN Committee on Disarmament and International Security, by acclamation for this term. And these are the people who trample on everyone's rights. And they've given, 400 UAVs or sold to Russia and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of rounds of ammunition. They don't cooperate with the IAEA. And yet here we see them being once again honored in it. And it's, consistent with the trend at the UN. I think this is a new low. That Israel filed a complaint with UN that Hezbollah scheduled drills, which they carried out, which showed them taking over Israeli civilian towns, it's not new, but it tells you the degree to which they engage in these kind of blatant demonstrations. And now they were accused of killing the Irish member of the United Nations, Sean Rooney, on December 15th of last year. And the senior judicial source said that five members of Hezbollah and the Amal movement have been accused of carrying it out. You can be sure they're not going to suffer any consequence for it.
Iran and the Gulf, what looks to be a naval strategy, a naval alliance, fast attack ships, seizing ships. Is there a general thinking about what Iran's mission is here, Malcolm?
Yes. So this is a complicated story, but of great importance. We have reports that Iran says it's going to form a naval alliance with India, Pakistan, but also the Gulf states. And they specifically spell out Qatar, Kuwait, et cetera, UAE. It's a response to the United States, obviously, and to the command. But the fact that the UAE pulled out of the joint command, which I think is a big blow, gets very little coverage here. But I think Iran is taking advantage of that, and especially in the light of Saudi Arabia and Iran engaging in some sort of negotiations, and they're still going on. You see that they haven't had the exchanges and all the other things that were supposed to take place. But when the UAE, Bahrain, Qatar, Iraq, and all these countries are supposedly being included, according to the naval commander of Iran. So this coupled with the fact that we're seeing more and more aggressive behavior by Iran. They say that the United States Navy has said that the Iran Revolutionary Guard fast attack boats, which you actually asked me about last week, have harassed shipping in the Straits of Hormuz. And supposedly a ship was being seized. And its sailor, the United States said its sailors and the United Kingdom Royal Navy came to the aid of the ships in the Straits of Hormuz. The three of fast attack IRGC vessels with armed troops approached the ship at a close distance, but they were able to get the message out, and they got the United States got pictures, images that came from a U.S. Navy Boeing plane, and they sent the U.S. guided missile destroyer and a frigate to respond to the incident. But we know that two other ships have been already seized. You know, the United States seized a ship of Iran carrying illicit oil shipments through the straits. 20% of the world's oil passes and every day, and this is really critical. People don't know the importance, but we saw the reports that it brought to the public a couple of weeks ago about the two ships that were captured. They're becoming more brazen in the in their attacks and in their responses. And we know that this ship, the Suez Rajan, is now off the coast of Galveston, Texas, that the United States supposedly took because of its illicit shipment of oil. Now, there may be a story here that Iran seized the ship because it was smuggling oil, but it was not with their permission. And they had transferred it to another ship. So this could be a conspiracy within a conspiracy. What we know is that Iran is coming for the IAEA today. We know that they are forming these naval alliances. We see the United States relationship with Gulf countries weakening, and putting this all together makes for a very complicated and dangerous picture for the U.S. and our allies.
The UN nuclear watchdog, IAEA, which you just mentioned, denied within these last hours that the agency has watered down its standards in an investigation into past Iranian activities. Watered down. Malcolm, that's exactly what we've been waiting to hear. What is your opinion now? Skipping those two suspect sites, doesn't that qualify as watering down?
Absolutely. I think that Mr. Grassi, the director general, was trying to counter the terrible reporting of an image that has been created of the IAEA, where they announced that they were stopping the investigations at two sites identified by Israel where evidence of highly enriched uranium was found with no explanation. As you know, the Iranians closed the cameras on a lot of the sites that they used. Now, what Grassi is saying is they didn't close it, they just shelved it, meaning they can open them again. And they said there were some positive steps in giving them some monitoring capacity, but it's a fraction of what they needed and what they wanted. And the process is not sustained. The Grossi said that agencies was not able to perform JCPOA verification and monitoring. And all of these are important steps because those who want to start pushing for a new deal in the JCPOA category will know that this, that we really don't have the information, that they're not in compliance and they cannot monitor, he said, neither their inventory of centrifuges, rotors, bellows, heavy water, uranium ore, and acknowledges that they have 100 kilograms of over 60% and probably a stockpile of uranium enriched up to 20% of about half a ton. And it's risen by a quarter in the last 3 months. So they're clearly moving ahead, violating the understandings. They are placing, the agency said for the first time, monitoring device at Fordo and in the Natanz pilot fuel enrichment plant so they can detect rapid variations. But this is not the kind of system that will guarantee that they know how far Iran has advanced. He did not accept Tehran's explanation and seemed ready to keep the probes open. They were saying that the depleted uranium is part, it was at one location, and they gave him a possible explanation, but nobody is buying it. So it's not unclear what the shelving really means, but it appears that it's frozen for now, which gives Iran an advantage again. And, you know, you understand more and more why Israel and others feel you can't rely on the international bodies, and that the United States, which has been pressing, doesn't have the ability at least to deliver if they, you know, for fundamental challenges like this.
More trouble, Thaddeus.
Malcolm, you have more information on a story you recently broke about Jordanian arms smuggling.
So the Jordanian arms smuggling issue is a very unfortunate one because the border between Israel and Jordan is very long, very porous. Stuff is smuggled across all the time. I was there on patrols where I saw how they capture them, but it's such a huge area. And sometimes, you know, the cameras get triggered by a camel wandering across the desert. But there's been a flood of weapons that has crossed Israel's borders. We cited in our discussions a couple of weeks ago that a Jordanian official had 75 guns, additional rifles and ammunition in the trunk of his car. And because he had diplomatic immunity, he could pass through. He was caught. And now it seems that there is a great deal more, and that these are being used for criminal and terrorist activities as well. Maybe some say that it's preparation for the day after Mahmoud Abbas, the president of the PA, steps down. There's a large demand in the West Bank for weapons, where crime there has risen so sharply. Jordan has a large supply of weapons and needs the money. So the combination is an obvious one. And there have been efforts between Israel and Jordan to engage in counter-terror activity, but they have not been successful in deterring the ongoing smuggling. So there's demands that Israel do more, hold people accountable more. And the fact that this lawmaker was released to the Jordanians to put on trial and with the assurance that he would be prosecuted. But we'll have to see whether that really takes place.
There is a report, Malcolm, that members of Congress are discussing the Abraham Accords, extending it into the continent of Africa. What can you tell us?
Yes. So this is an interesting story and something I've worked on and others have been looking for a long time. But now a bipartisan group of 29 members of Congress sent a letter to Anthony Blinken last week, and they urged the administration to work to facilitate normalization between Israel and African countries, many of them Muslim countries, and to take advantage of the opportunity to expand the success of the Abraham Accords to much broader areas. And I think it's true in Africa. I think it's true in Asia. And this would advance long-term regional economic and strategic interests of the United States in Africa, build ties with Israel, which has much to offer them in water reclamation, harvest reclamation, so many other areas, agriculture, agritech, and medical tech, that this kind of expression of support, I think, is a very, very important statement and a direction that I hope they will move in the coming months.
Malcolm Hohenlein, Conference of Presidents, major American Jewish organizations, Thaddeus McCotter. I'm John Batchelor.